And he starts off by saying that the grand storyline of biblical redemption is not confined to the rescue and reconciliation of a handful of desperate souls. It encompasses the restoration of all things. And of course, he references Acts 3:21 there. Evil is met by Christ in two different ways. It's met by the humble and crucified lamb at the cross. That's Revelation 5:12. But it is also met by the resurrected one glorified as a lion, verse 5, who will return to earth in a colossal display of far-reaching power. Right. It's the one that the Jews wanted off the bat. It's the ones that they wanted to come in as, you know, the
putting powerful their palm fronds Messiah and, who comes yeah. in and takes over.
All right, a cult that yeah. no one has ever ridden on. I'm sure this is just the Trojan horse type deal, and he's going to come in and smack down the Romans. Yeah. Well, instead he dies.
Right. Yeah.
But then he rises again, and yeah. That's the upswing, and now we're getting to the higher J shape of the meta narrative.
That's
of,
right.
Of
the
history.
Upper part of the J. There, right.
Right. Yeah. That's what we want in the theodicy is not the evil worth it, and is all evil kind of taken care of in the good, and right. So that's what he's. That's what he needs to do with this, the second part.
And Christensen tells us that without Christ as judge, that is the lion, right? The glory he receives as the redeemer, the lamb, would be severely muted.
Right.
What enhances the glory of Christ lies in the juxtaposition of his inglorious path to the cross with his undiminished status as a risen Lord and King of the universe. And so he wants us to consider this cosmic scope of redemption and its implications for the greater glory theodicy that he's put forth.
Right. So we start out with Christ as both lion and the lamb. And so he says that we expect Christ as the judge of all humanity to mete out justice. We have no warrant to assume his mercy. An all perfect, all, you know, big God. Would take any slight against him as offense, and since he is all-knowing, all-perfect, all-powerful, obviously he's going to wipe us out.
Right.
Because we have done evil. We've done things against him. We're the glitch in the computer program that the person goes, "Ooh, I don't like that," and deletes the key. Right.
Delete.
Yeah. But God doesn't do that. So he has mercy. A sin-filled world ought to be prepared to face an unrelenting wrath and retribution, not the offer of his pardon. So what we should expect is not heaven.
Right.
There's no grace to be had. What we should expect from all our stories is justice, is the removal of the bad. What should confound us is that the Son of God would himself meet up with the same wrath that he ordinarily and rightfully imposes on the guilty, yet gladly heaves the severe weight of it on his own innocent shoulders, all because he is eager to pour out his mercy on many unworthy vessels of wrath. And of course, that's hearkening back to our Romans 9 there.
Right. So he takes what we should get.
Right.
Is basically what he's saying. Right?
Which is the surprise. It's the crux of the Christian message. It's not let your good deeds and your bad deeds be weighed upon the scales. It's not, if you can find some sort of enlightenment to transcend the ability to find enlightenment, there's no you're going to live again as a bug until you're a really good bug, and then you move up to the cow.
That's right.
But it's Christ, it's God coming down, taking on human flesh and paying the penalty and absorbing the wrath of God.
And so Christensen tells us that the triumphant aspects of Christ's atoning death is known as the Christus Victor.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
This metaphor serves as a bridge between Christ's humiliation, right, when he came in the incarnation, and his exaltation at the end when he, you know, rises above and rules and that sort of thing. And so he tells us that while death marks the work of redemption that Christ accomplished during his first coming, Christus Victor, as a descriptor of that atoning work, begins to hint more directly at the raw power that Christ's broader cosmic work of redemption employs in his resurrection and then obviously in his second coming.
Right, right. So it's that powerful king motif that kind of we would come to expect. Christus Victus, Victor, speaks primarily of the victory over evil that Christ's death secured, but it also encompasses the triumph over death that Christ's resurrection secured, the establishment of Christ's lordship and his exaltation, and the final triumph over evil forces that will occur at his second coming. So again, this is the highlighting of his kingship. So his first message was repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand, and he throughout talks about him as being Lord, commanding the seas, commanding disease, commanding the powers of evil to flee from him. He allows angels to come to him and minister to him after the temptation. He shows his deity and his power and his lordship over those things, and ultimately from death and then into resurrected life, and then establishing then his kingdom as the slain lamb. And yeah, we see that in Revelation, and he'll get into that a little bit, but I thought that was a good point that he makes on how Jesus is seen kind of post resurrection or exaltation. Mm-hmm.